Gracias.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. So I'm less anxious than last time. I was, like, deathly afraid. And then I called my dad, like, 10 minutes before. He called me, like, asking if I could pick up milk on the way home or something. And I was like, yeah, Dad, whatever, I'm about to speak. And he's like, oh, all right, yeah, good. You know, like it was, like, meaningless. And it put in perspective that, like, this matters very much because it could, like, help somebody. But, like, as far as how I look, it's irrelevant. So let me remember that. I don't matter. Okay. In a good way. There's, like, a lot of relief in that. So I got sober September 17, 2012. Adam D is my sponsor, and I'm on steps like 9 through 12. I'm like physically shaking, but not mentally anxious. Okay, so my mom died when I was 16. I hadn't drank yet. And I start with that because, like, I would start on my first drink, but it was like such a big event in my life. Like, in reality and in alcoholic excuseism. I milked it for all it was worth, like, with every teacher for years, as long as I could get away with it. And, you know, who's anyone to tell me that it's not a big deal, you know? So, like, same, like, and the few teachers that did, I was like, oh, my God, how do they not give me a break? Like I was such a victim. And I have a great dad. I had a great life. I went to great schools. Like, I mean, I had a good childhood, good enough. There's no reason I should have. I didn't have any legitimate reason to feel bad for myself, right? Like, I mean, but life was so painful. Like, I went through high school, and like maybe something I said to the cool kids, or something I didn't say to the girl I liked, or something I would obsess about all night, like review it, like, oh, you're such an idiot. Why did you do that? Why did you say that? This strategy, like, just like trying to manipulate the world around me to get what I thought I needed, what I thought I wanted, was like to be accepted, I guess, to be a part of. And people say that when they speak a lot, like seeking to be a part of, but like I don't know it as that at the time. I just like think I don't want to hate myself or something. I don't know. It's just like I think I know what I need, right? And so I'm going through life like hypersensitive, objectively thinking that I'm more sensitive than other people too. Like, I thought for real my feelings were more than yours, which is so, so arrogant and selfish and crazy. Like, so I finally had my first drink. I had like tried to drink and like didn't drink enough because I was too anxious. And then one night I was like, all right, I'm pushing through. And like in the half hour window I had before, like, I blacked out, I was so relieved. Like, it was like deflated. I was like, I didn't care what I looked like. I ran up dancing to some kids freestyling on the corner in the Bronx that I didn't know. Like, you know, like, I just didn't care. And I woke up, my dad was all nervous. There was a bowl on one side of my bed and throw up on the other side, and a sleeping bag on the floor. Like, my dad was so scared that, like, he slept for a little bit on the floor of my room because he found me in the hallway of our building in my own throw-up, like, after my curfew. Whatever. I mean, the fact that I wanted to drink again doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic, because lots of people throw up their first time, right? And they're like, yeah, whatever, I'll do it again, but not as hard. But I was just thinking, like, wait, that half hour was awesome. Why not feel that all day, every day? Like, it's like my thinking in treatment eventually, like, was like, if I could drink successfully, like, what would my schedule be? And I was like, well, I would definitely want to drink Monday. Like, I would definitely drink all weekend. And then I just realized I would be drunk all the time, like, as much as possible. So there is no success. My first drink was maybe like 6 months after my mom died. But anyway, like I said, I used that as an excuse. Went away to college, got arrested. My dad, you know, didn't go to college. His dad didn't. So it was like a big deal. But I wasn't participating in it as much as he was. You know, like, it was more, like, all I cared about was feeling good that moment, I guess, just feeling comfortable. Like, I just was still, you know, I hadn't really fixed any of the hypersensitivity or selfishness. I just was getting out of it for a couple hours here and there when I was drunk. So I got directly drinking related. Like, I got suspended second semester freshman year, minor in possession of alcohol and some other stuff, like for arguing with a cop after slap boxing, and they said, whatever. Oh, God. 5 minutes. Yeah, I got to get sober. So I get kicked out. I go back. Then I get arrested again at a house party. Another direct alcohol charge. And 100%, I could take a lie detector and tell you that it was the cop's fault, that this is what everybody's doing in the school. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I'm again a victim. And it just didn't register. So anyway, I come home, blah, 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 try to go to school. I'm still, like, just... Again, just totally selfish. Like, every interaction with people was just like, like how people say, like, how do I get what I want? How do I use them for what I think I need? I didn't have any real relationships. I just, and then I'd be devastated. Like, this one girlfriend who I zero, like, was genuinely cared about her, and then was upset when she, like, cheated on me and left. Like, I was just like a succubus, but I guess a guy. So eventually I'm living in Chinatown in a 10 bedroom share. It's illegal. And then my girlfriend at the time tells me she's going to Korea to teach advanced English. And she was like the last, like, band-aid to make me, like, at least be able to lie to myself that I was okay or whatever. And so I was, like, stuck with myself and how I was acting every day, just living to drink and failing all my classes and, like convincing my dad that everything was okay, that he should still be paying for rent and me to go to school and stuff. And then she left, and 2 weeks later, I emailed my dad and was like, I'm a mess, I gotta go to treatment. I go to treatment, introduced to AA, I think I'm too unique, I'm like, how does this apply to me? This is crazy, like I'm approached with it. But I did relate to the other people in the groups. I went in and out of treatment like 6 times because I would get out, and then my plan for sobriety would be like, well, life should be better now, I'm sober, let me just, like, do, like, let me try to go out with girls, or let me, like, I remember getting a tattoo, and I was like, that's good for one day of sobriety, because, like, that'll get me outside of myself. But, like, I even knew at the time that it was worth so little. Like, it was worth, like, you know, any shiny new thing is only worth so much. So eventually I lied to my dad. This is a year and a half in Florida, in and out of treatment halfway, and he allows me to come home, but I tell him I'm sober when I land in the airport here. I'm like, actually, you know, I don't really have any days. And he's like, oh my, you know, this is your last chance. And 2 weeks after that, I came here. I stumbled in. I sat in the balcony. Well, first I came out front of the front doors and I saw everybody with name tags. And I was like, I asked somebody, where is the AA meeting? Looking for people in the bay. Like, you guys, no way. You were AA. Like, I was looking for a bunch of, like, people who were disinterested or something. I don't even know. And I had been in and out of AA, but you guys look too happy and good looking. And then we're like, no, this is the meeting. I was like, oh my God, this church lets us in the main part? Like, I couldn't believe it. and so I sat upstairs. I bumped into somebody I recognized from high school and his sponsor, Sean D, my first sponsor, just started talking to me. And before, I was so miserable, I should say that before I came here, I was in the moment, like I had gotten drunk and I didn't feel outside of myself. I just felt like so ashamed, like I didn't get the relief. And that's God, that's luck. Like, I'm just lucky that I had that, because if it still gave me relief, I wouldn't be here, I don't think. I wouldn't be prompted enough to change, even with the consequences, because the consequences never were enough for me to change anything. I needed to not get the relief. And so thank God I had that moment where I was like, this is not doing any, like, I don't feel any better. And so I was like, the first guy that has even the lights on a little bit, I'm gonna ask to sponsor me. And it worked. Like, he was my sponsor for like 2 years, like Sean. But I started going through the steps, and I started, like, doing for the first time stuff that I never did in Florida in after treatment and going to halfway and being told, like, for, you know, a month and a half in a chunk, like, as soon as you get out, get a sponsor, do the steps. Like, I logically was informed of these facts, but I just never was in enough pain to do them, I guess. I wish I had better news that, like, pain wasn't my motivator, guys. I'm sorry. Like, if you're new, like, but it was. And so anyway, so I started, I was in enough pain to do stuff that made no sense to me, and, like, Jeff said one day, and it makes sense. It's like, by definition, the only way I'm ever going to change is if I do stuff that is outside of the frame of what I understand, right? Because all the things in the frame of what I understand are me. So I have to take a babyest leap, and it's not even a leap because I could see it's working in you, and do these things that I don't want to do, that I'm like, no way is that going to work. How that bleep is like hanging out with a bunch of guys that I don't like and going to dinner going to make me feel better, you know? Or like looking at my behavior and like admitting that I'm selfish. And like as soon as I started doing my fourth step the first time, I called my sponsor crying first. Like, I'm so angry, I'm never going to get better. And then I realized, oh my God, like what one girl that really hurt me, I saw, like, I way was worse. So, whatever. So, I'm good now. Again, I spoke mostly about being sick and didn't get sober till the end, but goodbye. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Lee.
Hi, I'm Lee. I'm an alcoholic. Cool. So I've been, my sober date is December 13th of 2012. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. Nicole D is my sponsor. I've worked the steps and I've also worked the traditions, but now I'm back on step 7. Whew. And, wow, it's such an honor and a privilege to speak. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to speak anywhere at all, well, AA, but especially this meeting. To just be here is just such a miracle. And I'm super nervous, but I'll just keep it simple, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I text my boyfriend before. I was like, give me, like, a joke to say, like, for an opening. And he didn't have anything. And I was thinking, like, what am I thinking? Like, this, it is a huge meeting. It's a huge meeting, and there's a lot of people, but this isn't a comedy club. Like, this is AA. And, you know, I'm here to carry the message, and the message is the 12 steps. And so I'm sorry if I'm not funny, but I really wish I had a joke. But anyways, so what happened, I grew up mostly in Florida. My parents were separated, and my mother was a single mom. And this has nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic, or this is a reason why I am an alcoholic, but it was just, I felt really... I didn't have a solid foundation. I felt like a really cracked foundation. You know, I didn't have a father figure and a mother figure in a home life. And so I felt just really more uncomfortable. And I just remember my first drink. I was maybe 12. And me and my brother found my mom's wine and we drank it. And I just remember all the home life that I didn't like or was uncomfortable with just went away. And I remember I just felt so... using comfort and peace. And I remember, like Ryan said, if I could feel like this the rest of my life, like, sign me up. You know, I was immediately a blackout drinker. I was immediately consumed by alcohol. I always got drunk from the very beginning. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that because I hit a bottom so quickly, so hard, so fast. And I hate this story, but you know, I was really rebellious growing up. I got in a lot of trouble. I went to jail. I was kicked out of school, kicked off of cheerleading teams, basketball teams, detentions, you name it. I was not a good kid. You know, and I just remember in the book, like, we seize fighting everything and everyone. And I was like, what? I was like, that's like the opposite of me. Like, I fought everybody and everyone. And I was just such a fighter my whole life. And it was a real struggle. It was rough. So I was 17 years old. I was in now in New Jersey. My father lives in New Jersey, and I was in a nightclub, and I messed with the wrong person. I called him some really nasty names, and he beat me up really bad. I can't believe I'm telling this like 800 people, but I woke up in the morning and my front tooth was gone. And I looked in the mirror and I saw I had one front tooth. And that was the first time that I looked at my alcoholism. That was the first time I saw that. When I looked in the mirror, I saw a girl with brown hair and brown eyes. And I was like, I have no idea anything else about this girl. And I finally saw how I treated my family and myself. And people around me, and I was a monster. And I had that cry for help, and I called my mom, and she said, okay, let's put you in rehab, across the country rehab. And I go to the dentist the next day, and I get my tooth fixed. And I say, hey, mom, I'm fine. Just a bad night. I'm totally cool. No problems. Looking great. And she's like, no, you really need to go. So I went, and I was introduced to AA. They taught me about the steps. I really thought I was going to learn. I really thought I was going to have a therapist, and she was going to talk about my issues, and then I was going to be able to drink like a lady. But alcoholism is, I can never, ever safely drink alcohol in any form ever again. My mind and my body just do not break it down the way a normal person does. I got 2 years, and because AA works, I got, you know, a job, a home, college. I started going to meetings less and less. You know, 4 meetings a week, 3 meetings a week for a month, 2 meetings a week for a month, 4 meetings a month, 3 meetings a month, and it slowly drifted down. I was in Vegas, and it seemed okay to take a Percocet. I took a Percocet, and then I began to drink, you know, cranberry and vodka. By the grace of God, I got to come back, and I actually got another 2 years of sobriety. But the same thing happened again. I, you know, slowly stopped praying, didn't do my 10th step. I never even actually meditated those both 2 years. But this time I was, you know, I hear it sometimes in the meetings, I knew I was an alcoholic and I didn't care. And I was drinking the alcoholic death. And I was like, that's totally fine. I'm going to drink to die. No big deal. And I kept my life really small. I got myself in trouble, out of trouble, in trouble, out of trouble. My family didn't know. I wasn't really causing that much harm to anybody because I was more of like a closet drinker. And I worked in the bars. And but anyways, my I had a one-way ticket. Oh, not a one-way ticket. I took a one-way car ride to the beach, and needed a way back. A family member found out I was drunk. My father called me. My father has never yelled at me, and he said, Lee, you know, I'm really worried about you. And his voice started to break. And that was enough for me. I signed myself into a 30-day state-funded rehab in Paterson, New Jersey, which was a really awful experience, but I knew that I had to confine myself for 30 days to a facility to not drink. My alcoholism had its, you know, grips around my neck, and I knew that I couldn't be out 24 hours. So I found the Atlanta group. They said it was structured here. I found somebody who had the light in their eyes. Her name was Bunny Shapiro. I have a new sponsor now, but, you know, she took me through the steps, and it's been an amazing experience. I mean, I've had 3.5 years today. I was really nervous around 2 years. I didn't think I would make it, and I just want to say, you know, if you're new, you know, when I first came here, I thought I didn't fit in for months and months and months. I sat in the back. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want anyone to talk to me, and, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to make it, but I kept coming. It was super uncomfortable. It still is really uncomfortable, but, like, little things start to happen. You know, I have a really, really amazing life today, and it's not because of anything outside. You know, it's a relationship with a higher power. It's the peace and the comfort that I get not having a drink, by praying and meditating and doing the steps and building relationships with people. If you're new, just, you know, grab somebody. You're more than welcome to come and talk to me. I'd be more than happy to help you. And if you're struggling, I remember another thing I said to my sponsor. I said, oh, my God, it's such a bad day. And she's like, oh, were you thinking about yourself? And I was like, yeah, I was. And it's so funny. Like, I had to retrain my mind. Like, when I have a problem at work, like, what do? I call a newcomer. When I have a problem with my boyfriend, what do? I call the newcomer. My bank account is bothering me. I call a newcomer. And she just said, like, just keep give. And when you can't give anymore, give some more. And I just keep doing that. And it's, you know, when I woke up this morning, my life was a mess, you know, but I pray, I meditate, I make calls, I show up. My life hasn't changed. It's just my mind has changed. You know, I'm on a gratitude list, and I keep on the gratitude list, and I just keep having to focus on what I do have and what I don't have. And so I'm, thank you, everybody.
And board. And tonight, our main speaker is Johnny O.
Everybody, my name is Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. How you doing? Good. Glad to be here. Grateful to be sober. Want to thank Nye for asking me to speak. Love AA. Got a lot of good things going on in my life today. Great relationship with my family. Solid network of guys in my life. My dad and my sponsor sitting in the front row. Yeah. What about me? Some viable business opportunities in front of me. I got a complete physical back in July. When my blood work came in, my liver enzymes were perfect. And I can assure you, none of these things were in place the day before I walked in here. God in my life today, before coming into AA, praying to God, usually went something like this. And some of you might know this prayer. God, get me out of this one. I swear I'll never do this again. Or God, I got $300 on the Knicks. Please, God. By the way, only an alcoholic would put $300 on the Knicks. Come on, man. Even Spike Lee ain't taking that bet. I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like. I grew up in Brooklyn. Hard to believe, right? You know, I remember playing stickball with my friends and drinking beer. I was 11 years old. You know, not the average day for a fifth grader, but, you know, that's what we did. That's what I did. And you hear people talk about having that first drink and that warm feeling and saying, this is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been waiting for. I didn't feel like that. I didn't like the way alcohol tasted. I don't remember doing anything special for me, but the older guys were drinking it, so I drank it because I wanted to fit in. It was always about fitting in. I fit in pretty good when I played sports. There were times I literally found sanctuary in sports. You know, but you can't play sports 24 hours a day. It was a long, slow, insidious process for me. I didn't miss work or family function until I was in my late 30s. I was a weekend guy, a binge drinker most of my life. You know, nobody really knew what I was doing. I went to high school in the 70s. I liked high school. I didn't go to class much, but, you know, we had great fellowship, though. Caused a lot of trouble. Very rarely did I ever get caught. How I got away with some of the stuff I got away with, it's a conundrum. You know, I had to rat myself out on the fourth step. There were some guys in my school who got pretty good at hockey. When I was a junior in high school, I was scouted and asked to try out for a team in the United States Hockey League. A few of us made the team. Moving from New York to Austin, Minnesota, to say is a culture shock is an understatement. We got there, people were like, wow, you guys are from New York? That's so cool. Are you Italian? I said, oh, God. What is this, Deliverance? You know? Jesus, calm down. Nice people. The food was a little suspect, you know. My mom made some of the best Italian food in Brooklyn, so, but You know, when I got there, I was afraid I wasn't going to fit in again. I was a kid. I was 17 years old. I was away from home, playing with guys that were older than me. We drank beer. We chased girls. We played hockey. I fit in like a glove. Halfway through the season, I get hit. Very bad back injury. I had to come back home. You know, sometimes I tell this part of the story backwards. In 1972, my dad got sober. Because my dad got sober, I was able to play on some junior teams that got me prepared to play in the United States Hockey League. I didn't know how powerful AA was at that time. It's pretty clear today. So I come back home. I'm introduced to this medication. I'm angry. I'm full of fear. My friends are staying. It was devastating at the time. I'm drinking. Nobody really knows what I'm doing, except my dad's 8 years sober. My dad's, you know, he's a pretty smart guy. He used to do this thing with his fingers. If you're going to live in my house right here, I hated that. You're going to live by my rules. And I said, you know what? I was done. And I said, blank you. And I don't know if anybody knows what the PLA is, the Police Athletic League. My dad did a little boxing in the PAL when he was younger. There's a very famous boxing gym in Brooklyn called Gleason's. He did a little training in Gleason's. I kind of forgot about that for a second. But when he hit me, I went straight down, and he stood over me. I'll tell you one thing. If I knew then what I know now, I would have called his sponsor. Shit. Right. Hello? Are you guys reading the book or what? What the fuck? Hello? Love and tolerance of others is our code, right? He's right here. You can talk to him after the meeting. So I said, screw this. I'm done. I'm leaving. My little sister was crying. She didn't want me to go. My mother was crying. She didn't want me to go. My dad didn't want me to go. He said to me, I don't want you to go. I just want you to stop doing what you're doing. And I basically chose alcohol and, almost said the D word, alcohol and the lifestyle over my family. College was not an option for me. I mean, when I went to school, I wasn't a bad student. But there was guys in our neighborhood that had things that I wanted, and I wasn't going to wait 4 years to get it. I quickly got into sales. None of them were legal. And I had two friends that were getting into this acting thing. And I said, maybe I'll try and do that. You know, there's a way to make some money. You don't have to do any real work. I mean, my thinking was skewed at best. And one of my friends was doing pretty good. But you got to have your days free to go on audition, so you got to work at night. You know, so I'm working at night, sales in the daytime, bouncing around from some catering jobs. And then I got a job at there was a very famous nightclub in the late 70s, early 80s. Some of you might remember, called Studio 54. And I got a bartending job there. And it was like I died and went to heaven. Clearly, I was introduced to other things besides alcohol, and I loved it. Not a lot of consequences. We had a lot of fun. There was a few nights where, if anyone's ever done that, just, you know, 7 or 8 quick shots of tequila, everything was fine. This was right before the AIDS epidemic made news, so sexually there wasn't anything to worry about, so we didn't worry. A good friend of mine, Johnny B, used to work at me. Never seen this guy in my life without a cigarette in his hand. He used to say, Johnny O, we made Sodom and Gomorrah look like Little House on the Prairie. I don't know. Maybe it was a tie. It was a tie. But, you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, Johnny, was it really that much fun? You know, I'm almost 14 years sober. I look back and I said, yeah, it really was. It was incredible. But not so much at the end. I had an opportunity to do something in the entertainment field in Tokyo. I went out there for 6 months, and at that time, I could pretty much start or stop whenever I wanted. Wreaked a lot of havoc at night, never missed an appointment in the daytime, never late once at that time. Come back home, my boy's picking me up at JFK, 20-minute ride to Brooklyn, back into sales. Now it's not high school sales. This is a codified business now, right? Doing this again, right? Real quick, you know. Started working at this new place on Columbus Avenue. Everybody from studios hanging out there, except we're not at studio no more. It was like one of the first restaurants that turned into a lounge. And if people remember, in 1986, called Cafe Pacifico. I don't know, 70th in Columbus. Anyway, I'm having trouble sleeping now. Now I got to take some stuff to sleep. The really good times are intermittent now. my first night out with some bad consequences. I come home from an all-night run. My heart's going crazy. My girlfriend's on the phone calling. You know, it's 86. There's no cell phones. We don't even got beepers yet. She's calling everybody. Look, my heart's racing. I get home. She's screaming at me. I said, I have something that's going to help me calm down. There's nothing. There's a bottle of Absolute on the table right here. Like, she's here. It's there. Unopened. Very rarely did I drink at home. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to open up the bottle. I'll guzzle half of it down. My heart will slow down. I'll pass out. She won't be. Everything's going to be fine. I open up the bottle. I guzzle half of it down. Instead of my heart slowing down, it speeds up. Now I got pain running down my arm. Now I got pain running up my neck. Now I'm in panic. And I said to her, we got to go. We got to go now. 911, the ambulance picks me up. Long Island College Hospital is 5 minutes away. And I didn't know this at the time, but when you get to a hospital in a self-induced situation, they're not really that happy to see you. You know, they weren't dismissive or unprofessional, but they were little. And the woman's asking me questions. I said, lady, I'm having a heart attack with the questions. I said, look, if you just give me some pills, you know, I will leave. She just, like, growled at me. You remember Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? She looked like Nurse Ratched on steroids. I was like, all right, Tom, I'm going to get my ass kicked. So now I'm hooked up. Now I'm in the back. They got me hooked up to an EKG machine. I'm only doing it on the weekends, right? 24 years old. My girlfriend's crying. I'm crying. You know, it wasn't like she's driving me crazy. I can't wait to get out of there. I never wanted to hurt her. I loved her. I treated her well. It was just some nights I went out. I couldn't stop, you know. And I'm dealing with nurses up until this point. Finally, the doctor comes in. He pulls the curtain back, and he pulls my girlfriend to the side. Like, Paisan, I could hear through the curtain. And he says, look, maybe if he stays scared a little while longer, he won't be so quick to do this again next time. I mean, it's an admirable suggestion, but look, fear is not going to keep me sober. If it was, I'd be celebrating 44 years with my dad, right? I've been dealing with fear since the first grade. Finally, right? Finally, they give me a shot of something in my shoulder. All the anxiety goes away. You know, there's a part in the book that says, we can't bring into our mind with sufficient force the pain and suffering of a month or a week ago. Forget about that. We got to change that. I'm still on the gurney with the sticky things on me. The stuff hits. The first thing that came to my mind was, I think I left a package under the lamp. You know, I'm going to finish that bottle of Absolute. This has never happened before. I'll be fine. I don't remember exactly what happened, but when I get home, I didn't drink. I didn't do anything else. You know, I had a few more nights like this. I didn't have to go back to the hospital. I said, this sucks. I'm done. 3 months goes by. 6 months goes by. 1 year, 4 years. Never picked up a drink. Never picked up a substance. Didn't go to AA. I didn't call anybody. I did it on my own. You know, if you want to call it my four-year anniversary, I decided, you know, how bad can it be if you could stop drinking for 4 years on your own, right? You know those little bottles of champagne you get at a wedding with the couple's name on it? It's on my refrigerator door for 2 years. Every day, open the door, closing the door, open the door. Now my girlfriend is my wife. She's away. And I said, I'm going to have a glass of champagne. I take it out of the refrigerator. I think it said, Joey and Marie on it. Imagine that. I pour it into the glass. There's only enough for one glass of champagne. 20 minutes later, I'm on the phone with the guy. 10 hours later, I'm in the back of an ambulance. One glass of champagne. And when I first got here, I wasn't sure. Do I need to be here? Do I need to be in another fellowship? And I was counting days, and I was at a men's meeting in Hoboken. Great men's meeting called Bowery Boys. And I don't remember anything else about this meeting except there was a guy sitting in front of me, and it's like he turned around and he was talking to me, and he said, it doesn't matter how much you drink. It only matters what happens when you drink. And I said, okay, well, then I belong in AA. Because if you have one glass of champagne and you're in the back of an ambulance, call me old-fashioned. That's not social drinking. You know? Just saying. So I would imagine most of you know the city geographically. 88 to 92, 4 years, right? I'm at a payphone. We got beepers now, no cell phones. I'm on 30th and Lex. The ambulance picks me up. for what, you know, Bellevue's right there, right? Instead of taking me to Bellevue, they take me all the way up to the west side and all the way downtown to where St. Vincent's used to be, 13th Street and 7th Avenue South. One guy's in the front, the other guy's in the back asking questions, again with the questions. You know, I'm in the comfort of the ambulance, and I'm starting to feel a little bit better. And I said to the guy, you know, I'm good. He looks at me and he says, what do you mean you're good? And I said, yeah, I'm good. You can let me out. And he looks at me and he goes, we can't let you out. And I said to him, sure you can. I said, just pull over. Calm down. Turn the lights out. Relax. My grandfather's from Sicily. I won't tell nobody. So they want to put me in a straitjacket at this point. So we pull up to St. Vincent's. Clearly do not let me out. And I get out. I said, you can't make me come in, can you? He said, I can't make you come in. We strongly suggest it. I do not go in. I head east on Greenwich Avenue. Subsequently, I go on an 11-year run. Right? Out of control. My sobriety date is February 22nd, 2003. And in between all of this, believe it or not, there were some good things going on. I managed my wife's career. She performed at Radio City. She performed in a 6-time Tony-nominated show. We started a production company. I made a couple of good investments. Because of drinking, you know, I almost gave it all away. You know, I also managed my own career. The FBI wasn't too happy about that. But well, it's on the fourth step. And I figured out what the problem was. When I was in the nightclub business, everything was fine. When I got into the bar, restaurant business, that's when everything got horrible. So I said, let's get back into the nightclub business. So me and my friends, five ex-bartenders, we opened up our own nightclub, can't make this up, called Speed. Right. Wait. With three E's. Right. No. True. Just Google it. 20 West 39th Street. We opened up June of 98. You can't, you know. So I figured if I'm up in the office instead of behind the bar, you know, and I was able to stop, given sufficient enough reason, stopped for 4 years, I stopped for 6 weeks. I'm doing all this on my days off, right? So we have a big meeting, the five partners with the promoters. It's a very successful meeting. So there's someone says, call the waitresses in. You know, let's have a drink. So, okay, the waitress comes over to me. She says, Johnny, you want something to drink? And I said, I'll have a Heineken, you know. I didn't even drink Heineken. I think I saw the TV commercial the day before. Give me a Heineken. And then she said, would you like anything else? Not one of my better maneuvers. Up all night, losing a lot of weight, spending a lot of money, could have been a better husband. Not good. Anyway, things didn't work out in the nightclub. Had nothing to do with drinking. Had nothing to do with any other substance. I just said, we had a little bit of an FBI component to the story. You know, my dad and I have some good friends, and the situation was squashed. It's pretty easy to figure out, right? So I figured, well, maybe this is a good time for Geographic, right? Bill Wilson did it, right? Things got rough, packed up, took Lois, they went to Canada, right? Things got rough, packed up my stuff, and I went to Las Vegas for a year. I figured, you know, I went out there to open a legal but immoral business. There'll be a test after the meeting. And just to end the matter, for the first time in my life, I couldn't show up. I had a great relationship with my dad. I couldn't call my dad back for months. I was either too drunk or high. When I came down, I was too guilty. My dad was 30 years sober. I couldn't do it. I had a great relationship with my mom. I couldn't call her back. And I'm just going to end the craziness by saying it got really dark and it got very dangerous. And it got very dangerous for a lot of people. By the grace of God, I was guided into this program, you know. And one of the conundrums of recovery, you know, why us and not them? I hung out with guys who did what I did. I hung out with guys who did less than I did. They're gone. They're not coming in. So I'm grateful that I'm here. I asked Mike to sponsor me when I had 36 days. Some of you know Mike. Mike said, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shake hands. We're going to make coffee. We're going to do step work. We're going to do this. And I said, I'm going to do whatever he says. You know, and I'm independent. I'm on my own since I'm a kid. I come in at 41. And I said, I'm going to do whatever he says. It wasn't because I wanted to be a good AA. You know, I'm counting days. I don't even know what that means. I've never heard that phrase before. I just didn't want to go back to where I came from. because the pain and the emotional pain was far worse than the physical pain. I could have taken another beating. You know, I could have kept going physically, but I couldn't take it emotionally. I was at rock bottom. And I'm doing everything that Mike says. We get to the second step, I struggle. I had a tumultuous relationship with the Roman Catholic school system. You know, I went to Holy Innocence Grammar School. Can't make that up. 17th Street, Beverly Road, Brooklyn. You know, this is what I heard. If you do this, you're going to suffer. And if you do this, you're going to burn in hell. I remember looking at the nun, like, you know, I'm 9 years old, you know. Like, why the burning, right? Why not stay after school, put your head on the desk, right? Why the burning? Very dramatic, these Italians. But I know everything that the nuns told me wasn't true, because if it was, I should have went blind 40 years ago. Right. There you go. A little you got it? But actually, I had an experience with the second step that changed my life. I did the third step with Mike, getting on my knees and holding another man's hand. You know, I wasn't too thrilled about that. But I remember Mike got a little emotional. And I didn't know what, you know, I'm counting days. I don't know what was going on, but I said, okay, this is a big deal. You know, I wasn't too comfortable with the act, but it felt right. It felt like I was doing something good. That's all I remember. We got off our knees. Mike had this leather bag, and he handed me papers, and he said, here, start writing. I know the book says, next we launch out on a course of vigorous action. Mike took that very literally. I mean, off the knees, papers in the hand. I think I might have still been on one knee. Anyway, we went through the directions and the instructions. 7 weeks later, I called Mike up, and I said, I don't know if I'm doing it right. And Mike said, oh, really? I said, yeah. He said, Johnny, are you being honest? I said, yeah. He said, are you being thorough? I said, yeah. He said, I said, yeah. But he said, Johnny, get it done. I said, but Mike, he said, Johnny, get it done. I said, okay, resentments. Number one, Mike R. Breaking my chops. Number two, Mike R. But you know what? If I look back, you know, I wasn't a blackout drinker, right? I remembered everything that I did. There were a lot of things on that paper I wish I didn't remember. And I'm going to these fifth-step meetings, and I'm hearing these people talk about this weight being lifted off their shoulder, and they're walking hand in hand with this freedom. And I called Mike up, and I said, Mike, I'm ready to go. And we had a little conflict in schedule, and he said something to me. He said, Johnny, just so you know, you might feel worse before you feel better. Never thought about that again. So we sit down, you know, in Mike's basement, and resentments. Of course I had resentments. Look what they did to me. Don't worry about the fourth column. Look what they did to me. You know, harms to others, except for my family, my mom, my dad, my wife. You know, this guy was a degenerate gambler. He's five dimes in a hole. Come on, really? This guy was a drug dealer. We're going to make an eight-step list here? What are we doing? Right? What are we doing? Really? Come on. But when we got to the fears, it hit me, you know. I was sitting across from a man, and now I have to tell him that I'm afraid. Not only am I afraid, but I got a list of fears. I was afraid to tell Mike I was afraid. It was one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life. You know, all the street stuff we did in Brooklyn, I was petrified, you know? It's not like something we spoke about on the street corner in Brooklyn, you know what I mean? Hey, Anthony, you know? How you doing with fear today, you know? Never really came up. Never came up. But Mike said to me, you know, when I was done, I didn't feel good. He was right. I was guilty. I was shameful. I was angry at myself. I was pissed. He said two things to me. He said, first of all, you don't have to repeat that stuff anymore. That's up to you. And then he said, there's going to come a time when you're going to have an opportunity to sit down and make amends, and God willing, put some of these things back together. Real quick, this was 6 and 7. Mike said to me, I told Mike, I don't want to do this no more. I never want to do this anymore. He said, that's great, John. He said, show me. I don't want to hear about it. He said, these are the show me steps. So anyway, maybe the most freeing experience I had in Alcoholics Anonymous is when I sat down and made amends to my mom. I never physically harmed my mother. You know, I never stole money from her. You know, I moved out when I was a kid. But at the end, you know, at the end, when I was in Las Vegas, and she would call, and I couldn't call back, and I she was having panic attacks and anxiety attacks. I harmed her. I stole her peace of mind. I stole from her. So Mike said, "You look, whenever you sit down with a loved one or a family member, they're so happy that you're doing what you're doing, they just kind of stop you halfway through and they just say, keep up the good work, you know?" So I sit down with my mom. She's got some experience because of my dad. And I'm talking really slow. And I'm waiting for her to just say, keep up the good work. And she looks at me and she said, "That's nice." She said, "I want to hear what you got to say." I was like, okay. Obviously, she was poisoned by Al-Anon. How pedestrian. Yeah, right? Come on, man. But it was a blessing in disguise. We read from the book. You know, we spoke. And then a good friend of mine told me to ask this question. You should ask everybody, is there anything that I missed that you want to tell me? Right? And I asked my mom, and she said yes. And I said, Maron. I thought we were done. Thanks, Ava. But again, it was a blessing. What a gift to sit and do that. 6 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. My parents moved up to New Hampshire. It's about a four-hour drive from here. I'm in Jersey now. I would get up at 2 in the morning to be on the bridge at 3, so I would drive 4 hours so I could be there when she woke up. She was in intensive care. 14 years ago, I couldn't even pick up the phone, man. I couldn't even pick up the phone. You know, how do you pay AA back for that? It's priceless. I could never give back to Alcoholics Anonymous what it's given me. You know, but one day at a time, we show up and we can contribute today instead of take. You know, and there's people who say, you know, thank God for AA. You know, well, I have to thank AA for God, you know, and everything else I have in my life. Thanks for having me.